Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Diane Wisga. Diane Wisga helps women clarify their ideas and amplify their messages in the spirit of who they are. How? By partnering to create their confident origin story and voice. From U.S. Navy nurse to lawyer, speaker to litigation consultant, and seasoned backpacking adventurer to storyteller, life has been fall down 7, get up 8. For 30 years, Diane has been helping professionals take their story from a message only they could hear to the publishing world, the courtroom, hospitals, board meetings, and the airwaves. Stories that swayed juries, built markets, spread ideas, and changed things. Today, Diane helps women become successful origin story creators in the spirit of who they are, finding the words they didn't know they had to connect with, engage and enliven their audience to action while transforming the lives of those they serve. And Diane, that sounds like a good year's work right there in your bio, at least.
I'm the firstborn daughter, Dave. Come on.
Hey,
it came with my cereal.
I was an only child for a long time. And then a couple of years ago, I found out that I had a sister through Ancestry.com. So now, but I am still the oldest child. So I get the narrative that we are raised with. So.
There you go. Yeah.
And I tend to have several balls and juggling in the air at once. But anyway, welcome to the podcast. It's just a delight to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to sit and share the mic with you and see what kind of magic we can create for your listeners.
Would we had the pre-chat before we scheduled the podcast, and we just thought it was going to make for a great conversation, so I'm looking forward to this. So whenever you're ready, we'll get going.
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. First question, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path.
So do you want me to name three and then explain them?
However you want to do it.
Okay. There are three that come to mind. You live long enough, you get all kinds of experiences. But the first three that came to mind would be after college, my parents agreed to let me backpack Europe by myself. And this was at a time when we did not have cell phones. Cell phones weren't even in our future. And so they could rely on maybe getting a postcard from me. And when I went, I had no real plan. I had an open-ended ticket to fly back again, which was how, you know, people did it back then. And I had a copy of the Go Europe book in my backpack. I had a borrowed backpack, and I went with a general idea of the countries that I wanted to visit. The plan was that I would just do the Let's Go Europe book and get from country to country based on what trains were going where and when. So I had a general idea in my mind of where I wanted to go, what I wanted to see. And I knew generally when I had to come back because I would have been showing up for the Navy. But for them to let me go didn't make sense to me then as it does now. That was a profound gift to me from my parents, that they would allow me to take off that way. And they had raised me well, so I think they trusted that I wasn't going to do anything incredibly stupid. But I really had to figure it out. you know, I'd never been to Europe before. And so here I am, a single woman in a backpack, living on my own, figuring it out, meeting people as I could, living in hostels. And that trip, I think, actually was probably more inspired by my mom, because my mom was always one of those, let's do it. My dad would come up with the idea and my mom would implement the idea. And there we go. So that is thing number one. I was gone for about six weeks on that trip. The next that comes up, I was a Navy nurse, U.S. Navy nurse. I was a Navy officer, and I served at Portsmouth Naval Hospital in Virginia. I took care of children. So I was a pediatric surgical nurse, surgical pediatric nurse, and then a medical pediatric nurse for the last year. And I chose to do that after I graduated college. So this was what followed the European backpacking adventure. And I chose that. I chose the branch of the Navy because my dad had been a radioman in World War II, and his five brothers were also in the military during World War II. They served in different branches. More of them were in the Navy, but there was a Marine, there was an Army officer, and one of them was actually on a ship that was bombed in Pearl Harbor. And believe it or not, all of them came back home again. And to me, the opportunity to be of service in the military mattered. It mattered then. It was something that I wanted to do in honor of my dad. I still have his old Navy pea coat. And those 3 years were very formative, because while many of my classmates from school, we took their bachelor's degrees and went into various hospitals in Boston and New Hampshire and other places, I was one of the few that chose the military. And what's so important to me about it now, looking back, and I think I realized it then, was I was all of 21 years old, and I was in charge of a 30-bed open ward unit, a 2-bed step down for burn cases, and a 4-crib semi-step down for babies with hydrocephalus. And I had LPNs who knew much more in terms of nursing than I did. And I was responsible for the core staff as well, the core men and women that served. And it was an eye-opening experience to see how the moms who were taking care of the kids, because dad was deployed, you know, what that meant, how they held the families together. It was an incredibly valuable learning experience in terms of duty and service and responsibility. And the last, so I will tell you that those 3 years were three of the very best that I've had in my life. And then the last was walking the Camino de Santiago. So I walked from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port to in France, all the way over the Pyrenees to Santiago, Spain. It was a distance of 500 miles, and I did it in 5 weeks. And I took a backpack, my own this time, and had that experience of being on pilgrimage. So it's kind of like bookends, in a way, of my life. I'm not done walking yet, but those two backpacking adventures really do stand as pillars to either side of my life, and then the military service in the early part. Yeah, those are three good experiences. Thank you for asking.
Well, you're welcome. And it sounds like a varied experience between being grounded in service and then just being the adventurer. And I kind of like that. That's a nice balance. You could see a lot of life from both sides of that. I mean, totally opposite paths, but at the same time, very similar in terms of what we can learn and what we can see. And I think a lot of times when we are in motion, when we are moving, when we are walking, when we're a part of nature or just a scenic trail, we kind of find ourselves in the middle of that, because it's just peaceful. It's empowering, and it forces us, I think, to go within and try to figure out where we want to go with our lives. So I think those are three very, very interesting and very synchronistic experiences.
It sounds like you know the power of walking. And yes, when we do, it allows us to get out of our own way and to be with those voices in our head, which eventually quiet down and become one voice. And a friend of mine used to say, truth whispers, everything else shouts. And she was right, that once we settle down and pay attention, we will hear that voice that gives us some sense of where we're supposed to go, where we're not supposed to go anymore, the doors that have closed behind us for a reason, and the pathway that is open for us to walk.
I agree. And in the light of service, you are in a large part about empowering women. In our pre-call, you spoke of the importance of women being heard, seen, listened to, and understood. What factors do you believe contribute to women not being heard, listened to, or understood?
I think it's severalfold. I think to begin with, and I'll use myself as an example, I think to begin with, we might not always take ourselves seriously. We come from a place of pleasing, and we might overdo that. We might lack confidence in the power of our voice, the fertility of our ideas, the innovation of our visions. And I think that that goes hand in glove with a culture that for millennia has had women in the back seat in a second place position. Women are not capable of, women are less than, women are fill in the blank. Girls can go to school and learn something, but boys are the mathematicians and the scientists. Mm-hmm. And while culture and while life has changed in my lifetime, the recognition that women are equal to on all levels has not taken hold. And so I start from the place of, if I can tell my story, maybe there is someone out there who will say, what? You too? I thought I was the only one. And I also think that it's the generations behind us. They did the best they could with what they had. And I love my mom to death, even though she's gone over the rainbow bridge, as it were. But she came up in a generation, and her mom came up in a generation, and that continued to influence. So as each generation goes forward and we stand on the shoulders of those who have gone behind us, we can open up more doors. We can express ourselves more clearly. We can stand more confidently in our voice, in our words, in our capabilities. So I think that while the culture and the generations that we came from were at a disadvantage for lack of knowing better, if you will, or the opportunities that weren't present, have had the effect of us being able to say, wait a minute, we can do better. And I imagine that the generations going forward, we're seeing it now. You know, we're seeing it now all across the country. We're seeing it now with the young people. Wait a minute, I think I know how to do this better. I can use my voice a little bit more confidently. I can speak my ideas with conviction. So I think it's partly gender. It's partly culture. It's partly politics. It's partly religion. And if we look at the pillars of civilization, social, political, intellectual, religious, and economic, we can point to each of those pillars and say they each had an influence in holding women back. And it is up to us to start chipping away at those pillars, unbalancing the status quo, not in a mean way, not in a hateful way, but in a way that says we have more to offer than even we could have imagined. And we want a place at the table.
Men need to be able to listen to what women have to offer, because it's basically about shared values and also complementary skills. We need to look at capability, we need to look at shared values, and we need to just cut across the whole gender divide. I love women who are empowered, who feel empowered, who are independent, who have their own voice, I was raised by three very strong women after my father left when I was 5 years old. And they were good role models for me. And they went beyond whatever gender expectations were back in the 60s. And they found their own niche. They found their own voice. And because of their influence, I married somebody who has her own voice and was independent. And I prefer strong, independent individuals, men or women. But I love the independent piece of any woman that comes across and just says, "Hey, you know, this is me. This is what I represent. Great. Let's have a conversation. Let's see where our values align. And if our values don't align, we just walk away very amicably. We just realize that, hey, you know, we just didn't click. We just didn't resonate, and that's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But we have to give each other space for our values to come out, our skills to come out, and we have to do it with respect.
Yes. Yes. And yes, and when I say that women should be seen, heard, understood, and listened to, that understanding part then converts. So if we feel that we are understood, if we feel we're making ourselves understood, if we feel that we're being taken seriously in the ways that you already spoke about, then we are much more capable of turning that understanding around to someone else. So think about the young women that are coming up, but I'm also thinking about the immigrants. I'm thinking about the many people that are coming into this country who have a plethora of skills and shared values. How do we bring them into the setting? How do we give them a place at the table? Because while they might not look like us or sound like us or have been trained in skills in the same way, they deserve and we owe them a measure of respect and common decency so that we can understand where they came from, what they're doing here, what do they want, what do they want to achieve, how do they see the world shaping up for themselves. So then it begins to ripple out across a great big lake. So we've done it for ourselves, and then we're doing it for others. And so each one lift one becomes the way of the world. And the last person out can shut off the lights.
Absolutely. And I think what you touched on is so important, is that we need to create a space for everybody's narrative and story to unfold, because we can learn from that. And we also understand how an individual came to the perceptions that they came to, how they acquired their values, what their influences were. And then we can begin to find some common ground. Well, there'll be differences, of course, because we're not all the same. But the key for me is finding commonality within the difference. And that's where we come together.
Yes, it is. Because as you said earlier, part of that is our values. Where are we aligned in our values? Do we sync up that way? And also, once we understand what someone else is going through, we have a better opportunity to help them achieve that. So then it becomes an opportunity for each of us to lift the other so that we all have a chance. We all have an opportunity.
Absolutely. So in your work with women, what tools, resources do you provide to help them find their voices, to become empowered?
That's a great question. What I find is that there is a great emphasis on your why. What is it that you're doing? And Simon Sinek's correct that your why gives you some information to what you do and what you do it for. But I want to precede that and say, what's your who? Because your who has to precede your why. And once you discover, uncover, unearth your who, then you're in a better position to say what your why is all about. What's it for? Who's it for? And why does it matter? And so my work will begin with an archaeological dig. And I call myself a guide, not a coach, although I probably fall underneath that umbrella. And then together we partner, because the story, the origin story that my clients work toward for themselves personally and professionally is a reflection of them. It's their voice, it's their words. And I start with the belief that each and every woman knows exactly the story she wants to tell. She just doesn't have the words to say it. And that story needs to be listened out of her. And oftentimes what I find is people come to me through a back door. For example, someone recently came because of a fear, which is pretty common. I guess it's number one in the world, the fear of public speaking. I want to get more comfortable with public speaking, and I want to be more comfortable speaking in front of teams and if I have to give a rotary talk. And what I find is that oftentimes that ask is what is covering up, or it's that ask, if you follow that ask, it's a clue to what's really underneath it, which is, do I have a story to share? Do I have a voice that's going to be listened to? Do I have things that are worthy of being spoken? And so the work of going back to the origin story and figuring out, what is that? How did you get from there to here? And it doesn't have to be from diapers to today. We find a slice of your timeline that is important. It's significant based on what it is you want to accomplish, to whom you're speaking, what audience you're presenting to. And we start to uncover what is the origin story, and we do that by an archaeological dig. And the archaeological dig is exactly what you'd think. You know, we go back and we look at the civilization that you lived in, and what shows up? What are the values? What are the values that show up in your life that have always been there from the time you were a kid? And so for me, from the time I was a kid, speaking my mind, fairness, and curiosity, those have been important. And those values have run like a river under my life. But only when I sat down and looked at it could I figure that out. So to prepare the origin story is a way of accessing the who we are, which precedes our why. And it helps us understand what we're doing, for whom we're doing it, and why we're doing it. And then once that's in place, the sharing of it, the delivery is the next step. Because once we can stand in our power and speak with confidence and conviction about how did we get from there to here, and it also gives us a clue to how we're going to get from here to there. So it's working on that. It's working on that origin story. And that origin story can be turned around professionally as marketing, as personal branding. It can go on an about page. It can go in a keynote. Personally, it just will help inform. Where did I come from? Where am I going? What am I doing here with the cosmic contract I signed? Does that answer the question?
Oh, that answers the question beautifully. And I like the fact that you threw cosmic contracts in there, because I'm a firm believer that we come into this lifetime with a specific cosmic or soul contract with those individuals, yes, who are also in our soul groups. And this has been influenced by the work of Brian Weiss and his book, Many Lives, Many Masters. And in my own life, I've come to believe that this isn't the only time for me in the physical incarnation. There have been other times. There have been other life narratives that have unfolded in different times. And I do believe that some of those unresolved issues from my life narrative and other lifetime get carried into this lifetime and demand to be looked at, demand to be the product of, as you call it, an archaeological dig. And I also like the fact that you call yourself a guide, because in the spirit of existentialism, person who engages in existentialism as a tool to help individuals find meaning, they are a co-traveler in the same path with that individual. They are not aligned themselves as I'm the coach and you're the coachee, or I'm the teacher, you're the student. We're aligned, and I am your guide. I'm going to walk the path with you, not for you. I'm going to walk it with you, and you're going to open up those aspects of your path that you want me to go in with you. And then we're going to go from there. And then once we build up that kind of rapport, you'll allow me to maybe point out a couple of other things that I saw as we were co-journeying on your path that may also enhance your origin story. So I like that. I like that whole piece.
I get shivers. I can see a river runs through it, because you're exactly right, Dave. I couldn't have articulated it any better myself. That is it. And the power is with the one that is walking along with us, the one that will show us what do they need to learn, what do they want to see and hear and feel, and when they are ready, into what rooms will they invite us so that mm-hmm. we can be of further use or support to them. So yeah, absolutely. We're simpatico. We're big time simpatico. Capital letter simpatico.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I think anything's possible. We don't have to label the human experience, Diane. We can create any type of words we want at this point and capitalize as many letters as we want. There's no limits to what we can do. No. There's only potential and no limits. Another question
Go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was just the word potential. It is that which comes alive. My clients will say, I had no idea. I did that. I really did that. I had no idea I could do that. That word, the potential, is like an unfettered, wide open frontier. And once a woman steps onto those planes and sees what is there for her to accomplish, based on what she has accomplished, what she mm-hmm. has achieved, what she has gone through. And now it's coming to life. It's as if by doing that archaeological dig and putting it into a shape, which we call the origin story, or I do, then you see, look at all of mm-hmm. that. Look at all of that that I am, and look at all of that that I can become, and look at all of that that I don't even know is out there yet. It's the potential. Yeah, that's a splendid word. Thank you.
You're welcome. Another question that had come to mind as you were talking. I imagine that when you're working with women who request your services, that you'll do the archaeological dig. And has there ever been a scenario where they said, boy, I really want to tell my story, but yet there's some hesitancy because of other barriers that have been uncovered, or maybe other factors, maybe messages they heard in childhood that they were maybe were not enough, messages that caused them to have the fear of evaluation if they went out in public? If that's the case, if those barriers do come up, how do you address those?
I think they come up all the time. I don't think you can do this kind of work and not have them come up. So it's a case-by-case situation, and I'm listening. So I'm listening with a storyteller's ear. The most important skill a storyteller has is actually to listen. You're always listening for the stories. You're listening to whether your listener is following along with you. So I'm listening with a storyteller's ear as to what is being said and what isn't being said. And I bring to the table a background of an incest survivor. And so I'm listening with a particular ear, because anyone who is an incest survivor knows that there is the fear of the voice being shut down, of not being believed, of being told that you're a liar, mm-hmm. Fill in the blank. And so there is a critical listening that's going on beyond the initial ask. And if I feel that I've been invited into that space, then we can work on that. And I will start by sharing my story. And you don't have to go into the dance of the seven veils and take away all the veils. It's enough to say, may I share my story with you? I think this is an appropriate place for it. As an incest survivor, I learned that, and this is how it showed up in my life. And these are the steps that I had to take to reverse that and take the conversation from there. So the other part of it is, we don't have to reveal all of the ills that have taken place within that situation. We don't have to reveal all the details, is probably the better way to say it. It can be sufficient to say, I'm an incest survivor. without having to fill in the nitty-gritty. What is important is having done the work around that issue. So I'm not a therapist, although storytelling is therapeutic. And sometimes the telling of the story is enough. If it isn't, then we're going to a different plane of therapy that's not in my world, but I can direct to that world. But doing the work so that when you tell that story, your listeners don't feel that they have to reach out and hold you and catch you. And so I have a story that I tell often. It's very short, but it goes through the ask to the universe that I wanted something completely different. I wanted a clean slate. Mm-hmm. And within the space of 9 months, I lost my mom, my marriage, and my law firm position. And what happened to me after that kind of made my bed my new best friend. And what happened after that was the kindness of a stranger. So I can tell that story with detail and I can do it quickly. But what makes that story understandable is this. You were talking earlier about values, and around the world, we understand those. Around the world, we also understand truths with a capital T. We understand love and hate and betrayal and friendship and whatever. So if I'm telling that story, people who have not experienced the same situations as I have will understand loss, will understand disappointment, will understand losing their way, because we've all had it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you live long enough, you get everything, and then sometimes you get it twice. And so for my clients, it becomes a matter of being vulnerable to them with my story, so that if we go back to your example of the guide, I get invited in to hear their story. And then depending on what that story is, what the woman wants to do with it, who she wants to tell it to, if anything, will determine our next steps.
And I think it's important for us, particularly with the life challenges we all have, to be as transparent with those as possible. I teach a death, dying, and bereavement course at Utica University. Mm-hmm. I am very transparent with my loss history. If I want my students, and I do want them to be able to become comfortable talking about death, I need to be able to model that I'm comfortable talking about my losses. Yeah. And what I've done to transcend those. Because if I can't model my own model vulnerability to them, they're not going to have permission in that setting to be vulnerable. And the other things you mentioned, active listening. I tell my students this all the time. If you want to get an understanding of somebody's background, listen first, commit to listening first, let the story unfold, and then reflect. And for individuals who are incest survivors, who have been victims of either physical abuse, emotional abuse, and again, sexual abuse, or have witnessed that, you need to allow them to find their emotional comfort zone. If they only want to go a specific ways with their story, allow them to do that. Because like you said, it may not be important for them to go into the details. It may just be important for them to say, look, I'm an incest survivor. I'm a survivor of physical or emotional abuse. And for them, that is important to allow that to stand as is, because it empowers them to do what they want to do, you know, moving forward. So if we can empower them as guides or as therapists or as coaches, however we label ourselves, that is going to be the key, because we want to be able to build long-term relationships with individuals who come in. And we want to be able to bear witness to their growth from the beginning until the time that they tell us, I'm ready to step out on this on my own.
You said something very important, along with many other things that have been very important. You said bearing witness. That's a critical aspect of this work, that we're bearing witness. In storytelling world, we say, We're holding the space for the story to be told. It's a safe space. This is where you tell it. It could be held right here and you don't have to worry. But we are at the same time bearing witness to what someone has gone through, how they have made it through the valley of death and came out on the other side. And in the litigation consulting work that I did for about a dozen years across the country, one of my jobs, and I worked exclusively with plaintiffs' lawyers, trial attorneys, getting the cases ready for trial. One of the bits of work that I did was sitting down with the plaintiffs and listening out their stories, like a story doula, like a midwife. And that was important because they had to have that opportunity before they got into deposition, before they got into trial to be a witness. And even if we lost their case, because you can never tell with a jury, they had the opportunity to tell their story, and someone was bearing witness to what they went through. And that sometimes really seemed to be enough. And so the work that I did, the term archaeological dig is not mine. It comes from one of my lawyer clients, I would say 20 years ago, as I was doing this work with a group of lawyers. And one of them said, well, this is just like doing an archaeological dig on yourself. Like, yeah, I think I'll take that. Thank you very much. So it is that bearing witness aspect is what recognizes the humanity in another and goes all the way back to something you said in the beginning about giving respect. Giving respect to the other.
And it says, by bearing witness says that your story matters and you matter. And I think that's key for individuals who have felt less than. They need to know that they are valued. And we can do that just simply without saying a word, just with our presence. I have a two-part question for you next. First of all, the inspiration for creating Quarter Moon Story Arts. And the second question, I love the picture of the lighthouse on your website. And tell us what the lighthouse also symbolizes in terms of both your professional mission and your personal journey. So the twofold question, tell us about Quarter Moon Story Arts and the symbolism of the lighthouse for you personally and professionally.
Okay. I moved to Whidbey Island. I like to say that I washed up on Whidbey Island, Washington, about 7 years ago, and I was looking for something to do while I was here. And one of the places you begin in a new community is by volunteering, and we have the Admiralty Head Lighthouse here. So I volunteered to become a docent. It's an absolutely beautiful place. People come from all over the world. People love, love, love lighthouses. And so as I was doing that, I was looking for a way to start another business. And Quarter Moon Story Arts was the thought that I had about transferring the skills that I had accumulated over 30 years of using story in nursing and business and law, but now being more specific to women and women's voices. So the Lighthouse kind of gave inspiration to whose stories now need to be listened out, whose stories now need to be heard, and whose stories now can you, how can you be of use? How can you be of use? How can you be of service? So that was partly the inspiration for that. There is a wonderful song by the country singer Kathy Mattee, and there's a chorus that a quarter moon's better than none when you're walking a night road. A quarter moon's better than none when you carry a light load. And I get shivers every time I hear that song because it says to me that a little bit of light is going to help you along that road that you're traveling if you're headed out of town. And so to have a little bit of light in that quarter moon, that's one of the things that I offer as a guide. There's a little bit of light here. So that's the inspiration for that lighthouse. Okay, a little bit about Admiralty Head. To me, a lighthouse does several things. It signals the ship or the captain of the ship away from the cliffs, away from the rocky passages. That's what Admiralty Head did, because when the sailors were coming in or when the ships were coming in off of the Pacific Ocean to Puget Sound through the Admiralty Inlet and the Straits of San Juan de Fuca, that's what they saw up on the cliff was the light of the Admiralty Head Lighthouse to guide them away from the cliff and down to Seattle. Each lighthouse has its own signature light, like your street numbers, your house numbers on a street. Mm-hmm. They're all individual, and there's maps that show you what lighthouse you're looking at. So for me, having the lighthouse there signals that this is a place of safety. I can help warn you away from the rocky places, but this, more importantly, is a place of safety. And if anybody's ever been sailing out in the deep blue sea at night and you see that lighthouse, you know somebody's there, somebody's watching, and so there's a sense of safety about it. And also, lighthouses guide you to a safe harbor, but not every harbor is for every boat. So some harbors are big for big ships and big yachts, and other harbors are meant for smaller craft. So I say you need to find the harbor that's suited to you, and you'll know that by the way the lighthouse attracts you, and the lighthouse says something to you by way of values or imagery. So it's beckoning you in. And the last thing I'll say about lighthouses is that they stand in one place, either on a jetty or on the shore. They stand in a place. They don't run up and down the shore beckoning in every ship that's on the horizon. And so from a marketing standpoint, it's a reminder to me to say, I have this harbor, and it's a sanctuary for these boats, and I don't need all the boats that are on the ocean. I know mine. Mine know me. I think I got it all there.
I think you did too. I think you got it covered, Diana. One of the things that I think you had it covered. But one of the things that really struck me is the symbolism of safety for a lighthouse. And I look at individuals who have come from unhealthy home backgrounds, who have had abuse histories. The biggest thing that we can do as therapists, as guides, as coaches, is create a safe and welcoming place for the work to unfold. And also structure and consistency. And when you mentioned, I also see that with the lighthouse. The lighthouse isn't going anywhere. It's going to stay in that one spot. So if me as somebody who is a trauma survivor I'm going to know that every day that I go to that lighthouse, it's not going to move. It's going to be there. It's going to be consistent. And that's also going to empower me to feel safe and do the work and allow my origin story to come out.
Yeah. Exactly. You got this. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, thank you. And couple last questions. One, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
I am, I can, I will. Just say it over and over and over. And when you wake up in the middle of the night and things look a little bit spooky as they do at 3 o'clock in the morning, I am, I can, I will. And like a lullaby, it becomes a mantra that is soothing because it's a good reminder of where you've come from and where you're going to. And you've done it before. You can do it again, and you can do it again better. So I am, I can, I will.
I like that. That's a very simple affirmation that I think could apply to just anybody. And it's very easy to use. And I am, I can, I will. I like that.
I will.
I am.
You can go ahead and spread it all around like grape jelly. I am, I can, I will. I am, I can, I will. Mm-hmm.
We all need those reminders that I am, I can, and I will. Because part of the human experience is a lot of times we are going to question our value. We're going to question if what we're doing has had an impact. And I think that's just part of our ongoing archaeological dig. We're always in that constant state of questioning and striving for self-improvement. And sometimes when we're too hard on ourselves, a simple mantra like I am, I can, I will can get us regrounded and help put things back in perspective again. So thank you for that, Diane.
Oh, you're welcome, Dave. And spread it around like grape jelly on a toddler.
I will be happy to do that. I'll spread it like grape jelly, but without the toddler. So we'll just do the grape jelly part. Finally, one last question for you. How can people get in touch with you? What's the best way for them to do that?
The very best way is to go to my website, and that is quartermoonstoryarts.net. And there is a plethora of information there. You can hear some audios on what I do and what I offer. There is a place where you can set up a free 45-minute discovery chat with me. And it's an opportunity to bring your questions, your thoughts, your project. We'll have an opportunity to sit together. I can listen to what it is that you have in mind. And then we can make a decision about, is this a good fit for us? And how do we go forward together? So there's a page on the website to hire me for that. And there's an easy peasy Calendly that you can choose as well. So that's thing number one. I'm on LinkedIn, if anybody is there. I have a wonderful podcast called Stories from Women Who Walk with Daily 60 Seconds. So it's on every single platform going, most especially, I think, Apple. It's a good place to hear me. And I say that it's become my business audio card because it shows people that I can take a message or a story, a call to action, and reduce it to 60 seconds, 75 seconds. And as we know, levity is brevity. And that I've recently set up a Substack account, but it's still a work in progress. So the most reliable would be the Quartermoon Story Arts, or email me, Diane@quartermoonstoryarts.net.
And I will make sure all of your contact information gets in the program notes on RSS and also on YouTube when we drop the video as well, too. So, Diane, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. I hope we can do this again sometime.
I'm really looking forward to it, Dave. When you run into people who are just simpatico with you, you want to have them, you know, move in next door, or if not that, sit on your front porch and have a piece of pie. So the invitation's always there. You find your way out to Whidbey Island, I'll leave a podcast burning in the window for you.
That sounds good. I'll have to find the best way to get to Whidbey Island. So
we'll figure it out. Pie will be waiting. And meanwhile, if there's a chance to circle back and share the mic with you, I would be privileged. Yeah.
And I would be privileged and honored to have you back on too. So we have to do a part two at some point.
Okay. That sounds good.
Thank you again, Diane. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.